let me be sure this is doing something. Yes. Towards the one, the perfection of love, harmony, and beauty, the only being united with all the illuminated souls who form the embodiment of the Master, the Spirit of Guidance. And then maybe lift your hands and just bless this circle and all those friends that are departing and taking their journey homeward till we meet again. Hold them in our hearts and let this light shine. Everywhere, let it shine. You know, my mom had a special skill that way. She could meet the people that could be so nasty to her, you know, like just hateful in a grocery store or something. And I could see her thinking, you know, she'd be looking up and down. She wouldn't often respond in a hateful manner or huffy. She would just kind of study the person. And she was very sensitive to maybe this was not a good day for them somehow, you know. And she never would ask them about that necessarily, but she'd find something that she could genuinely offer a compliment towards them. You know, like, you know, I like that topper. I love that necklace, or that shade of lipstick's really beautiful on you, or, you know, I like your hair, or something. She would just study them. And, you know, I've learned that from her. So now when I go places, Joe always says, how do you know them? It's like, no, I don't know them. I just met them. You know, you just find a way to connect. To me, in all the suffering in the world and all the questions of our politics, that's the most important thing. Meet people right where you are. When things, you know, some of my students, it was their first time to vote, and they were very shaken by the outcomes of the election. And I said to them, you know, Mother Teresa always said, we may not do great things, but we can do small things with great love. And I said, this is what you can do. You know, you're maybe not going to become a statesperson overnight, but you can become the statesperson of your own life and your own sphere of influence. You know, just be good people, think good thoughts, show kindness towards others. And somehow that gave them a feeling of purpose. Like, I can do that much, you know. I don't have to keep digging a trench that's deeper and deeper. So, you know, and again, Murshid Hidayat thought that work was amongst the greatest work that the Sufis have to do in the world, is just that manner of friendliness and feeling of kinship, brotherhood, and sisterhood. Karima Gita knows that at the college. She always says, how do you know them? It's like, well, I've just seen them in the halls. I start talking to them. You know, sometimes I know their whole life story after that, too. I don't know. I'm the kind of person people tell their secrets to. Yeah. So we were talking about the soul and the soul's journey and how to connect with the source. The analogy was as if the source is the sun and we are the various rays reaching out. And so Murshid says this: if one thinks of the soul as a line, at one end is attached to the goal and the other end is attached to the manifested. But when we look at the center of the line, it is one line. So where we, you know, I think of the Buddhist quote, the middle way. It's profound when you think of it in relationship to this metaphor. You know, one end is the manifest, one end is the unmanifest. And if we're somewhere in that middle ground, we can kind of see both of those and we can bring them together in the middle way. I mean, it's the middle way, right? He says, neither is God man, nor is man God. And yet man is God, and God is man. It's circular, sort of takes you in a circle again, you know. The difference is how we look at it. If the soul of man, woman, person is attached to the goal, then it has not departed from any sphere it has once penetrated. And we talked yesterday about the three spheres. You remember them? First one, angelic, jinn, and material, matter. Yeah. Okay, so passing through those different spheres. So even looking around this room, you can probably see people that have strong impressions from those different spheres. There might be someone in here that has angelic qualities or jinn qualities. You can kind of see it even in the earthly presence. It's very interesting to connect with that. So, you know, pay attention to what you're seeing and feeling. Again, if the soul of man is attached to the goal, then it is not departed from any sphere it has once penetrated. It is still there. So what he's talking about is this idea of existing in that whole range of spheres and being able to access it when we need it. Being it, manifesting it. But if man is unconscious of those spheres that he has gone through because he is so open to the visible sphere that his soul has closed its eye to the sphere within. I think it's important to practice a kind of agility and flexibility, even in everyday life. You know, we come here and we do these practices, but then are they practices that we can pick up when we need them in the moment? Do we remember? You know? Or do we get so caught in the material day-to-day life that we forget that? Last weekend we were at the Federation gathering, and someone came up. It was very interesting, and I wondered if it wasn't somewhat conscious on that person's part. We had been there 2 days, and this person knew that on that particular day I had some responsibilities. And they came up with an impression that they had carried regarding an interaction that I had had with another individual. And because I didn't respond in the same way or take it in that way, that person actually became a little agitated. And I said, this is not yours to carry. That was at me, and I didn't receive it at all in that way. I received it quite the opposite. So you can lay down that burden. But I was left with the impression of that feeling and that interaction. It jarred me, you know, the vibrations did. And so what I immediately did was, at that moment we were about to enter our heart circles, and that's the point where we would come together in smaller groups and talk to each other about the subject of the day, and you know, which was presented to the whole group. And I just had to tell the group, you know, I've had an interaction, and I'm just going to sit here for a minute, and I'm doing the air breath, because I knew it had not made an. I knew it had made an impression in my mind, not my heart. I might have done a fire breath, or I might have done a water breath, but I knew that I could go to that medicine because I'm so used to working with it. Hence the purpose of the purification breaths. You know what I'm saying? And then I could go into a practice with compassion, you know? And I could just, and then it cleared, it lifted, you know? So this is what I'm saying is, can we kind of keep our connection and use the practices? I mean, they're there for us. And so does that mean anything to anybody? Does that help? Okay.
I have a question though. You were just saying that the air breath was more for
mind.
Mm-hmm. So I at times also use the water or the fire for clearing emotional stuff.
The water breath is very good for your emotional state, for attachment or aversion. The fire breath is good. So I'm feeling, you know, if something happens and you feel an attachment or you feel you're losing something and you don't want to lose it and you're clinging, the fire breath can help transform it. If you're feeling, it depends. You know, if you're weepy, you may not need the water breath, which is the emotion. You may really need earth. But for me, I could tell it wasn't a feeling that kept going around. It was a think. I kept reiterating the conversation in my head, so I knew it was in the mind realm. Yeah. The only way you know how to work with those elements is if you use them every single day and understand how they work for you.
Can you say how they work for you, it'll be different for each of us?
Yeah. You'll have your own experience. I mean, I never want to take that away from people, but there are essences of those experiences that you'll come to understand. Does that make sense? Mm-hmm. It's like doing a wazifa. We're all going to have a similar experience, but it may be unique because of our own filters or our own life's experience. Yeah, and it evolves. You know, it's like that. The goal, you know, once you get to the goal goes further along on the horizon. Mm-hmm. Attune?
Do you think that partially why the elemental breaths work differently in different people is because of the elemental makeup of each person is different?
I think it could be. I think it can also be astrologically related for people that tune to that. I don't know much about that, but I think it can have its influences. You know, in the Ayurvedic tradition, in the Vedic tradition, they use astrology a lot for even making big life decisions. You probably know that.
Yeah.
And they also look at birth charts in terms of gemstones that will have to highlight or activate certain parts of one's consciousness, bring things into one's life. And they always design the stones so that the stone actually can touch the skin too in the setting. It's interesting.
I've done a lot of retreats with the walks of the elements and mm-hmm. planets, and he even did one where we walked our astrological chart.
Yeah.
Whole chart?
Yeah. And people walked the karmic difficulties that were in your chart. So if I was having trouble bringing heaven to earth coming out of the heavens, getting grounded enough to manifest or whatever. It was always about something like that. You might walk my Venus, and he might walk my Mars, and somebody else might yeah. walk my whatever it is in the, you know, conjunction of it. It's fascinating, because it was all based around the elements and the planets.
Mm-hmm.
I did Sam's work
with the... Yeah, I learned the elements walk a long time ago, and then while I said, go sit on a city street corner and
then do it.
Oh,
yeah.
Watch.
Identify who's air, who's water.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. But it's so fascinating to start to think about the world in terms of elements.
Yeah. Well, I think it's good to consider our interactions with people in that regard, too.
Yes.
Right?
Yeah.
It's very helpful.
And that's a good activity to do in an airport, right?
Yeah.
Do you do that? Sometimes when I'm with my sister, because we're both tuned in, it's like we're sort of, see that?
Is, yeah. You may not guess it, but I'm an air sign.
Oh. No.
So I do a lot of earth work.
Grounding, yeah.
I walk very hard to balance that.
Yeah.
You come hang around with us earthy people. Okay, sorry, David.
Oh, I love it. Are you kidding? That's what the class is for. So, let's work with our practice, which is... Yuck. Tomorrow we're going to have another practice added to that, by the way, so stay tuned. You know, sort of analyzing, and that would be good to do, is just... throughout the day, sort of visualize that line, you know, that connects you to the source. And know that you are your individual ray. You are your purpose. You are your purpose by the very fact that you're here. You may not realize it for some reason, but you are your purpose. And it will come to manifest. One doesn't have to apprehend everything with the mind. Things come to us. It's like that first day we were talking about, are we leaving to go to the sound upstairs, or are we allowing the sound to come to us? It's a totally different consciousness. So, just settling into your body for a moment. Just breathe. And take this image as the sun and the rays. And you can work with this in your meditations. Sometimes you might imagine the sun like the external sun in the sky and the rays coming out of which you are one. Or you might imagine the sun in your very being and radiating different rays out. These are in truth the facets of your own being, your personality, your thinking, your feeling. These are all aggregates of your being. But right now, sort of look for that, you know, place where you can kind of plug in. Just feel that getting plugged in. And remember Murshid's words, which say, if one thinks of the soul as a line, one end is attached to the goal and the other end is manifested. But when we look at the center of the line, it is one line. If the soul of man is attached to the goal, then it has not departed from any sphere it has once penetrated. And as we make the sacred sound, huk, think about that source just getting brighter and brighter and brighter. And use the breath and the sound to sort of experiment with that line that's connecting both the source and the goal and that which is manifest in divine truth. Yahuk, 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 yahuk. Yahuk, 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 yahuk. Yahuk, 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 yahuk. Now, breathing in, huk, and out, huk, 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 huk. Thank you. And just silently breathe in, huck, see if you can feel the essence of this divine truth, the one true reality. Yahuk. Now, please be mindful of taking this up as a practice. You will find you'll be more in touch with the truth, your own truth. You may be inclined to speak it more freely. Be mindful of that. Because sometimes mine comes out like one of those deities with the fire coming out of their head, you know. I can blast people away, so I have to be mindful. So, you know, if you find yourself getting a little trouble, you know, but it's important. And I think when we find ourselves speaking from that truth, other people hear it differently. It's just if I get my personality mixed into it, I can be mean. Ornery.
Yeah.
Feisty. Heaven is not a place where the virtuous are sent. Heaven and hell are both within man. All the spheres of which man talks are within, but he never realizes nor imagines that he can find the higher sphere within himself. Sometimes we have that feeling, don't we, in a beautiful moment in nature, we sort of lose ourselves in that ah, you know, it's just this ah. Maybe comes in a dream or someone stimulates that. I think if we have it even for a moment, it's something that we can recollect. It becomes a touchstone. Often it happens with initiation. One can reach that sphere, the blessing of an initiation. And I always say, oh, enjoy and remember, because often with initiation comes great change. The analysis of the spirit is simple. The analysis of the spirit is simple. There we go. Simplicity. Keeps talking about simplicity. Spirit is free matter. Listen to that. Spirit is free matter. And matter is dense spirit. Spirit is free matter. And matter is dense spirit. Pretty profound, I think. It's a simple phrase, but just think about that. I get back to things are not as they appear, nor are they otherwise. And that film I talked about, The Power of Ten, you know, you're looking at things out there and you get closer and closer and closer and closer and closer, and then finally you're looking in at the cellular level and it's the same thing as that we're looking out there, you know. We just think this is really quite solid, you know. It's not. It's Deepak Chopra, what does he talk about? There's like infinite space between every cell, right? That we're more space than anything else. Spirit is free matter, and matter is dense spirit. It is only the difference of words, and the most difficulties arise come from a difference of words. God, Allah, Yahweh, Buddha, there's one difference, right? People argue over many others. Or listening to the budget from one point of view and then listening to I call the Fox NBC, or MSNBC consciousness. Who's reporting? Same thing, different words, different interpretation. Words are to cover truth, not to explain it. Words are to cover truth, not to explain it. Truth cannot be explained in words. My friend Karuna Maima used to say that people were confused by the truth. It was too simple. And she would tell this story that truth and falsehood went to the river and they unclothed themselves. And when they came out, falsehood put on the clothes of truth. And everyone was quite willing to believe that. You all know that, because when someone tells you something, you just know if it's not ringing true, or if they may be not being honest with themselves and not even know it, but you know. And also trusting the environment, being awake to things that are going on around you, and it keeps one safe and aware. The spirit is likened to water, and matter is likened to snow. Water and snow are the same. It is only the condition of water that makes it snow.
Can you repeat that one?
Yeah, isn't that pretty? Water and snow are the same. Spirit is likened to water, and matter is likened to snow. Water and snow are the same. It is only the condition of water that makes it snow. That's like just a great quote to just, have around and read again and again. Moshe goes on to say, thus it is a condition of spirit that makes it matter. The first day, remember, Murshid was talking about the fact that God was unmanifest, and in that state, it's like Murshid Hidayat said yesterday, the eye cannot see itself. And so God, in order to see itself manifest, so that it could come to know itself in that manifest form. You're looking. Are you confused, Savitri?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. You had the. It is in this process that man must realize and come to understand the great fullness of the purpose of life and all that he seeks through life. What are we identifying with? For sure we have afflictions, don't we? We have afflictive emotions. Do we identify with that? Or do we identify with the greater part of our being that really is trying to always come through? And Murshid Hidayat talked about that too, didn't he? That covering. He said it was the ego. It is the ego. That constant insistence of proclamation of I-ness instead of selflessness. But you know, when we are the best we can be, we bring out the best in others. Think of the musicians there. They're tuning their instruments to each other. What are we tuning to? And that gets back to these astrological walks, you know, and rhythm, which Murshid knows so much about. You know, our rhythms are often different, and it can create a conflict. Our notes are different. It can create a conflict. You know, if someone's playing this note on the piano and you go play this note, Murshid says, it's not the fault of the notes. It's just they're not harmonious. It's like His Holiness always says, when someone comes and hits you with the stick, what hurt you? It's the stick. But are you mad at the stick? Right? It's, you know, that's Buddhist dialectics and philosophy. It's like, what's really happening? You know? So it kind of putting that in perspective. And when we look at things like that, then we say, well, you know, if they could do better, they would do better. I mean, people in that prayer, Dawa, you know that, or you know that prayer? The last line of his, it's by Murshid, Hazrat Anay Khan, Pir Murshid. He says, save me, my Lord, from the bitterness of my adversaries and the ignorance of my loving friends. That's profound, really. If he knew to write that down as a prayer, he knew that. Another line, save me from the playful children of the earth, lest they use me in their games and break me as children do their toys. It's all right there. Yeah? That prayer is really wonderful.
Is that in
I think so. I think so. Yeah. I mean, I can send it to you too. Anyone that writes me, nori@sufimovement.us. And if you want to be on the mail list, actually, Karima Gita can, if you're not on the mail list, we have a lot of sources out there. You can also Google it. The film that I showed yesterday, many people asked about that. It's also on the website. So you can view it again and again and again. And by the way, if you click on the teachings and just look, I have beautiful teachings of Anayat Khan. Sharif Graham, who you may know was the archivist for many years, he has so much information. And it was a several day lecture of him, Stories of Murshid. It's out there in audio files. He gave me permission to publish. And then, of course, films by Hidayat Anayat Khan. And also Hidayat's, there's selected writings out there by Hidayat, all available for you. So please go out there and look at them. Yeah, the first line is, save me, my Lord, from, I don't know if it's temptation. Save me, my Lord, from, maybe it is temptation of power, fame, and wealth that keep man away from thy glorious vision. You know, every line's like something to be studied. It's really beautiful.
What's the name of the poem?
It's D-O-W-A, Dawa, or Dua. You know, that same thing. Islam, it's Dua, isn't it? Prayer.
Yes.
Dawa. But it's D-O-W-A. Now, there's that Rumi poem, you know, that is so apropos here when we think of water and snow. Water and snow. Rumi says, be melting snow, wash yourself of yourself. That's the first line. And then it says, a white flower grows in quietness. Let your tongue become the flower. Be melting snow, wash yourself of yourself. A white flower grows in quietness. Let your tongue become that flower. It's like the purity of one's speech, the beauty of one's speech. Shall I go on? You with me? Anyone falling asleep?
Waking up.
Good, good, good. Yeah, I don't know what you just put in your mouth, but that often helps. I remember when I was in Morocco and we were listening to all these scholars. I was on this Fulbright with a group of people, and oh my God, they put us in these hottest rooms at these universities, and like on the second floor, there was no air moving. It was in the middle of the summer, and you know, we would pass like cinnamon gum to each other just to put it in our mouth and like just, you know, so we'd wake up, you know, we'd have to be pinching each other. It was like, you know, we only prayed we could go to sleep. It was so hot. Oh my God. Okay, so this is a little story by Murshid, and I always love the stories, right? It is related among Hindus that the Lord Indra, known as the God of Heavens, had fairies at his court. The fairy princess. And their work was to dance. Once, one of them went to Earth and saw a mortal being. And she fell so deeply in love with him that she lifted him up and brought him to the spheres of Indra. Really, isn't that the process of love, how we're so lifted up? I mean, honestly, when you first fall in love, people could say the worst things to you, and you just think, oh, I love them. It's all good. Everything is beautiful. Right? I mean, nothing seems to bother you very much. You're really lifted up. Well, just give it another year or so, and then you'll see. Then you have to remember, just like initiation, that upliftment. But you know, she lifted him up to the spheres of Indra. And we've been 14 years, by the way, and we're like still best friends, and we giggle, and we have so much love and fun. It's like, really? Has it been that long? So anyway, it was, yeah, and I get a love note every day. Every day.
Another one.
Kind of. Yeah. It's like when I got flowers every week. It's like, oh my God, it's such a huge responsibility to keep these expensive flowers, you know, delivered by. Yeah, can you just stop sending them? You know, and it was like our first year of marriage every Monday. Very sweet, sweet man. Anyway, it's a nice balance to my feistiness. So she brought him up to the sphere of Indra, and when it was known that a mortal man had been brought there, Indra commanded that he should be dropped back to heaven to live the mortal life, and that that fairy should be sent to the other end of the world to overcome her karma. Oh, the separation of love, right? That longing. This story conveys that every soul is born to dance before the throne of Indra, before the throne of God. There's a book called Dance of the Soul by Hazrat Inayat Khan. It's small, but it's really worth having if you can find it. Dance of the Soul. In reality, every action of beauty, of harmony, every action of love, of kindness, of of compassion is the dance of the soul. But when the soul becomes conscious of this dance, then the presence of Indra becomes clear to the soul. To be in the presence of Indra is to be in the presence of God. It is the greatest joy and happiness which nothing on earth can give. Murshid's words again. As Rumi has written in the Masnavi, where the soul is likened to a reed flute. Why does the music of the flute appeal to you? Because it laments. It cries. It longs for that spirit, for that being which was its stem. This reed was cut away from its stem and holes made in its heart. This made it cry. It cries with longing to rejoin the stem. You know, people think, oh, she can't possibly mean that, but I believe that the strongest, most beautiful thing we can give each other is love. And I'm not really talking about sentimental love or attachment, but really loving people. And it is sometimes not easy to do. But I can tell you that I have, you know, I think some of you know, it wasn't a very long time. I was some days in Calcutta with Mother Teresa when she was alive. And one of my responsibilities was to work at the orphanage for children. And when I would walk in, they'd come rushing like this, and they'd just want to be picked up and held. And really, I'm fairly certain that that's really what all of us are doing all the time. And so we don't have to go over and hug someone or even say anything, but just uplifting them with our breath and our consciousness, you know, that the African Americans have beautiful sayings, I think, in their, they bring spirituality into their everyday language. So, you know, and I go to some stores, I always go to the secondhand stores and things, and I always am there, you know, shopping with some of the ladies or some of the men. And, you know, they'll always say, have a blessed day. Or if you ask, how are you, they'll always say, I'm blessed. It's beautiful. And then if you're sharing something with them, because, you know, you become friends and like, does this look good on me? They'll say, I'm lifting you up in prayer. I'll lift you up in prayer. And, you know, we can do that for people. So just think about that. Even someone, if someone's treating you badly, they may have an illness that's causing them to do that, or they may just have the illness of, you know, bad recollections, mistreatment in their own life. I'm gonna turn this off for anyone that might be listening to the recorder. I'll come back again.